It's MERS Monday Podcast. I'm publisher John Marink. I am joined by a pundit all-star team here. We've got Dan McMaster from Grassroots Strategies. Or it's Midwest, correct?
Midwest.
I've got Jack Spencer from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, Ed Sarpolis from Target Insight, one of our favorite pollsters, and Kelly Rosman, the queen of messaging and PR in the city of Lansing and probably the state of Michigan for many years. So I'm going to start with the obvious question, guys. I still think this gubernatorial election is a lot closer than it probably many of us thought should have been. Why is that? We'll start with you, Dan.
I would say that you have a governor who is running a non-traditional campaign. He's gone towards the middle. He's gone to secure the independents. He has not secured the base, which is causing some problems. And I guess we'll find out election night. I mean, if he can go towards the middle, he can get the independents, and if it doesn't hurt the House, and he still has a working majority in the House, and not just a majority, but a working majority that's going to vote for his agenda, then he's a political genius. But there may be some fatalities in the House because the Republican base has not been secured.
Okay.
I actually disagree that they really are focusing on independents, because as someone who is a left-leaning independent voter, who's a senior voter and an absentee voter, I've not been targeted with a thing by their campaign. Yes, exactly. A shocked look from across the table from Dan McMaster.
Well, then I don't know who they're targeting.
I'm
not getting anything at my house, so
yeah.
I don't know.
So it's interesting. In the gubernatorial race in particular, there's very little, if any, direct mail out there at all, which is interesting. I've seen very little email. There's more digital, but
signage is very poor. There's no big
signage. Is crummy, so it's all TV,
like,
right?
I live in Shiawassee, but I have races in Clinton and Eaton, and I can't even tell you who the county snugger chairs are, if there are even any chairs. I don't know.
Jack, did they rely too much on TV? Is it just an assumption you can buy this thing from the air?
Well, they are. It's non-traditional campaign. So, yeah, I would say that they're doing a lot of things you wouldn't normally consider the way to attack the campaign at all. And I actually think that he's hurting in multiple areas, he being Snyder. It's not just the base, which I still think at the end probably for the most part comes through. It's also the seniors who many of which believe they were taxed, even the ones that really weren't. He's hurt with both social, to some extent, both social conservatives as well as free market conservatives. And it's basically been something where, and it's been consistent, I would argue, throughout his entire administration, their messaging is really poor. They have a very bad messaging, and I still think he pulls it out, but I'm like so many other people who just seem to say that, but then you're kind of going, but do I really feel like that? Well, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's so many people say the same thing. I think he's still going to win, and then they kind of go afterward, I'm not sure why.
Mm-hmm. Ed, there was a new PPP poll out last night. They're saying it's a 1-point race. As you looked at the polls and you've done your own work, where is this race going?
It's been a 1-point poll for most of the year. The first poll that I did for you back in March, it was 1 point. The poll we did in September was 1 point. It hasn't changed. I mean, when you think about it, and we were talking about you earlier, it's all been about the Geritol generation, no Gatorade generation. There's been no social issues, no female issues. I mean, the perfect example of what you have to do is Gary Peters. He's got the social issues, he's got the women's issues, he's got senior issues. Schauer and Peter both, I mean, they're very dull campaigners. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, when I was looking at some of the issues, what does Snyder talk to the voter about? The bridge? The grand bargain? The pension tax? What does he have for Republicans? I don't see anything that he can. As a matter of fact, I can't believe I've gotten so much about Obama and health care from the people, because that tells me his base is not excited about voting for him.
But you can't possibly think that hardcore Republicans are going to vote for anybody but Snyder.
But
that's what you're talking about in terms of the base,
but
right?
What did they say after the convention? We're either going to stay home or skip them on the ballot.
Oh, horse pucky. But there's no way that those hardcore Republicans or anybody who cares about voting who's a Republican is going to not vote simply because they don't want...
I'll take Shiawassee County right now, the 85th House District. Ben Glardon's in a competitive race. He has a Libertarian candidate. This Libertarian candidate hasn't spent any money. Depending on where you look at it, he's probably going to win with double-digit numbers. There was an independent candidate who polled 12%, I think, last time. It's Republicans. It isn't Democrats, it isn't independents that are going as Libertarian. It's Republicans that are falling off. And it's Ben Glardon's voting record, for the most part, not everything, but a lot of it has been the governor's agenda. So they may look for... I mean, they may do third party candidate, they may do a Libertarian, or
if this was a traditional year, any governor who was below 50% for more than a year, you'd say he's history. Okay, he hasn't broken 49%. He's always been at 47, 48. He's been at 45. Whether it's Republican poster, Democrat poster, because that base is not excited about him. Okay, when you go a whole year and you don't break 50% once.
But really, will Michigan voters who traditionally don't send a governor packing after one term? I think Swainson's the only one after one term that they actually didn't reelect a governor, right? Now, they didn't reelect Blanchard, but that was when he was going for his third term. Would be...
extraordinary.
Yeah, really extraordinary.
Well,
that's 44 years
ago. There's this apathy out there, okay? This is going to come down to turnout. This is not about... people switching sides or switching votes. It's all about turnout. And then what shocked me last week when I was looking to do some buys from my candidates, Snyder and Shaw are pulling money out of Southeast Michigan. Why? Okay, unless they're trying to move it someplace else where they think they got a battleground. It's kind of strange what they're even doing on the buys.
It's weird. It's patchwork all over the state. If you look at the House races, the Senate races, or do it by county, there's areas where Snyder's ahead, way ahead, more than what he should be above base numbers. There's areas where he's lower. There's areas where Terry Linehan and Rick Snyder have a 20-point gap between them. You have House and Senate races where the messages are all mixed up, and some of them are in multiple districts that are in the same media market, because you have some Republican senators voted for the pension tax, some voted against. House members voted for it, House members voted against. New candidates trying to get in, some that, most all are opposed to the pension tax. There's no clear messaging on the pension tax. Nobody knows. It isn't like you can say the Republicans did this and the Democrats opposed this, because there's Republicans out talking about, no, I didn't vote for the pension tax. No, if I get elected, I'm going to repeal the pension tax.
And in Michigan, we got Snyder Care, not Obamacare. So now you...
So then you have that, and then you have, if Lon Johnson's truly doing what everyone thinks he's doing of trying to turn out the voters who showed up in 8 and 12 but didn't show up in 10, and they're going to try to give them 14, they're doing it by the AV process, and they're going into large cities with minorities, Detroit, Saginaw, Flint. AV ballots are up in some of those areas. If you talk to John Gleason, a very high number have been returned in Genesee County, more than what probably should, on average, should be. Same thing down in Detroit. And if they're ginning the vote down there, and you have this weird patchwork outstate Michigan where you're not going to be able to gin the numbers.
I think that's the question. My perception is the Republicans are going to have a comparatively low turnout. And the question is, are the Dems going to have an even lower turnout? And this is what, where you start talking about Lon Johnson, you start talking about this grassroots movement. If that's the case, then there's the argument that this may have been a very smart move by him, and he may end up coming out looking very good under those circumstances. My question is for Ed. Does that kind of grassroots movement show up in polls?
Oh, it does. And the bottom line is you have to ask some specific questions in the survey as you want. You just can't just put it out there. What's interesting to me is that the people that they're getting AV vote, where they're going to vote at the polls anyways. Okay, so they're taking away from the election day pollsters because, for example, when they say absent votes polls be going from 25 to 27%. Well, as of last Tuesday, there were only 800,000 requests for AV ballots. Four times that is 3.2 million. That's what it was 4 years ago in turnout. So the question is he just taking people who were at the polls to get them to the AV? We don't know that yet.
Okay? That's a great
point. Now, but if you go to the Republican side, who admitted that a lot of the AV votes tend to be more Democratic and more female, then what Blahn has done is guaranteed people to vote that may not have voted at all. Mm-hmm. But we won't know that till Tuesday.
Right.
But there are more AVs.
I mean, they're usually Republicans do trail on the AV votes. I mean, in a true battleground area, they're going to be down 8 to 10% anyways. But we've looked at some of our House races that we're involved in. Okay, so who are these people? Who are these AV people? And there is now some seats, even seats that have minority populations, there is no sign that there's increased voter turnout with AV or they're not normal AV voters.
But in the 13th and 14th, it is up 38% compared to 2010.
Right.
38%, okay? But even when you look at Winfrey's number, yes, it's up. Mm-hmm. But still, they've lost 100,000 people out of the city. So there again, it looks like it's an up increase, but the same token.
I mean, you have to go in by precinct, and then whether you're using GOP Data Center or Practical Political Consulting, whatever software database you're using, and go through and look and see who these people are and see what their history is. And there is proof that there are some precincts where non-AV voters are getting AV
and GOP
ballots.
And even said in some of the Senate races, the Dems may have an impact because of what they
got. Well, the question is, do they actually return those? And the rumor is supposedly the Dems are getting them to sign up to get the AV ballots, but they're having problems getting them turned back in, which is why they're on the ground this weekend.
So we're not going to really know that question until Wednesday.
Right.
Now, speaking about Tuesday, though, it's a beautiful day out today. They're
right.
calling for 60% chance
monsoon.
Of rain tomorrow.
Monsoon storm.
Does that still make a difference?
Only if you're not motivated about the election.
Well, you just said, everybody here just pretty much said there seems to be a lack of passion in this.
That's why Lyon went with the AV program. He's hoping that no matter what the weather, that's going to be benefiting.
Yeah, I mean, he wants those votes locked in.
Well, and isn't it sort of commonly held that Democrats tend to be more impacted by bad weather? Apparently, white people don't like to get wet.
I wouldn't just say Democrats. I would say it's, and there's studies that have been done about this. It isn't just Democrats. It's minorities in urban areas.
Except solid senior voters like Detroit, they still vote. Despite what you hear about Detroit, they still vote.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the younger crowd.
So
it's the younger crowd.
May have a work schedule. Yeah. It's raining on
or
the way home.
Kids
they don't want to. Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. But the truly hardcore black senior in Detroit, they vote.
How much does Carrie Lynn Land's numbers hurt Snyder? The fact that you got no reason for a Republican who's watching national Fox News and interested in those issues, but you'd say your congressional race really isn't close.
Well, typically the U.S. Senate race is about 10 points less in percent in vote anyways. Okay? The problem, the fact that she comes after Snyder, so it's more what it does below the ticket than anything else. Because you remember in 1998, John Enger was the second biggest vote getter amongst Republicans. As a matter of fact, he went below the base. And the Republicans still did well in 1990, except for Governor Granholm. So you can't assume that at all. But the issue is that neither Snyder or Terry Lynn have talked about the social issues or the women issues effectively. That's where those independent voters, those women voters, might be sitting on the fence.
They do lose, though, in an opportunity, which I think that the Democrats are really starting to do this weekend, which is coordinating the message where you've got both candidates, right? I mean, isn't there an advantage to that, Dan?
Well, you'll see the Democrats out doing that, and they'll have their slate pieces. They're doing that on the Republican side. They have their bus tour, but I'll go back to my county, Shiawassee County. You have, okay, so if you're a hardcore Republican and you're not big on Snyder, you're not big on Terry Lynn Land, John Molinar just, you know, hasn't really even been elected officially yet as the congressman. You have Rick Jones, who's going to be your new state senator. You may or may not know. So, now all of a sudden you're down to your House race, which is a House race where hundreds of thousands of dollars are being spent, and it's a battleground.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a matter of fact, to prove that, we just did a poll in the Senate first with mayors, and you see that drop off. Here's the governor down here. There's the differences in the numbers. There is no connection.
I mean, the biggest races right now in Shiawassee and Clinton County. I mean, you have a House race. You've got the House race in Eaton County, and you've got judicial races in Shiawassee and Clinton.
that's what all the signs are. That's what all the mail is. That's what people are talking about. It's not top of the ticket.
Well, the biggest group that I'm seeing age-wise, though, is that the seniors, because they've been hit really hard, the 36 to 49 years age group is where the big swing is right now, how they vote. And the 71st, the seniors are pretty much consistent all the way down, mm-hmm. the 56, but that 39 to 49 group is the group right now that's really going to determine this race. Because okay. every poll, actually, they're all over the place, every poll.
All right, before we move on to the governor's race, I want you guys to make your prediction. What do you think is going to happen? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I'm going to pass.
You're going to pass?
I'm going to pass. I'm going to be like Teresa Bad. I'm going to pass. I don't know. It's going to be, it'll be a late night. It'll be a late night for the governor's race.
The bottom line, this race is all going to be about turnout. If I, with the traditional polling.
Are you going to pass, too, Ed?
I have to because the numbers indicate.
See, okay, so this is what worries me. And hats off to Lon Johnson. Because you don't hear anything out of Lon Johnson. So what's Lon Johnson doing right now? Mark Brewer, in the past, he would just be, you know, talking and throwing out press releases and everything. So what's Lon Johnson doing? He's raising money, and he's orchestrating this, probably, this Dem turnout with the AV process. And as a Republican, that makes you nervous.
And I've not heard one Republican pound their chest. I mean, this is the first year that I've gone a whole cycle. Republicans not pounding on their chest about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so there's always some signal that people, you know, even Democrats are depressed, but there is no pounding on either side. It's all about turnout.
Mm-hmm. You got a prediction, Jack, or are you going to be brave?
No, I think, I guess, you know, it's like picking next week's football game, but I think probably Snyder 51 to 48 with... you know, LaPointe going to the other candidate, something along that line. So these things tend to somehow stretch out at the end a little bit sometimes. But it's again, it's that same thing where everybody's saying, well, I think it's going to be Snyder, but I wouldn't bet the house on it.
And it's 2002 all over again.
People have been saying that for 2 months, mm-hmm. and you just go, well, he's the incumbent.
You going to make a prediction? Go
Why on. Would I make a prediction if the three experts aren't?
Oh, come on, stand out there.
Well,
let's be brave.
You know, I got to tell you, it takes a lot for voters to send an incumbent governor packing. Let me just say that. I lean toward Snyder pulling it out, but... you know, Mark Schauer's given him a run for his money, and it's not that Mark himself is running a hell of a campaign, nor is he a hell of a candidate. But Snyder's weak out of the gate campaign start, and then sort of Lon Johnson, who I got to tell you that I give that guy a lot of credit because their FOIA-ing of a variety of negative stories about the Snyder administration has been masterful,
mm-hmm.
and so I lean towards Snyder, but. You know, I'm wrong half the time anyway, so this could be one of those times.
So we can call it, what you call it, a toss ball? Or
I do right now.
Okay, yeah. Toss
yes.
up.
Yeah.
I've not seen anything that tells me that it's leaning one way right, as of today. It may be tomorrow we'll wake up, oh my God.
There's just so much. There's the right to work, there's pension tax, there's...
Okay, let's move down the ballot, though. Is there anything to talk about with the Terry Lynn Land? Gary Peters
she needs pizza money.
She said that in an email.
$5 buys a hot and ready for 3 volunteers.
And a bigger billboards.
Bigger billboards?
The billboards are so small. I mean, you literally have to almost drive off the road to see who that sign was for.
How did she end up being the Republican candidate, really?
It was almost,
how did that happen? Was it like she'd been a, you know, a...
Well, it was not their first choice.
No, it was almost like by default. It's like these big candidates, and I shouldn't say big candidates, but these other people looked at the race. I mean, Rogers looked at it clearly for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, we had Camp look at it for a little while.
Camp's retired.
And walk away. It's almost
just like...
You got
to remember, the very beginning... Because it's, you know, before we saw Schauer and polling numbers, whatever, like, it was like, oh my God, it's Democratic, no shot, you know, so no one else wanted it, the money thing. Peters announced like last fall he was getting in. So all of a sudden, money starts shifting that way because the national pundits, okay, even the Republican pundits weren't saying it's going to happen. Then the first poll, Terry Lynn lands ahead, and then she's it. And then
well,
Mackinac Island had it.
On paper, you know, if you just look at it on paper, you go female candidate, you go she's won it statewide elections twice, et cetera, et cetera. So from just that, looking at the resume of thing, it looks better. Of course, the problem is we know that doesn't necessarily translate.
She was the highest vote getter in 06. She was the highest Republican vote getter in 06. She had 56%.
It shows you the difference between running for Secretary of State.
And they're two very distinct
things. And then the other thing that was going on behind the scenes, at first the Republicans were fearful because Debbie Dingell was looking like she may be the candidate. Yeah. So all of a sudden, okay, it's a woman, we're done. And then she was forced out by party poopas, and then Schauer got in, okay? And then it was too late because all of a sudden Terry Land was woman against woman. And then, like I said, Mackinac Island happened, and that was the end of the race.
Well, there were other candidates that potentially could have done better that at a certain point were being discouraged from getting in.
But she was. I mean, we're referring to her public meltdown in front of the Detroit Chamber at the Mackinac Conference. But she was a weak candidate. Long before that, she'd already made gaffes. She was already avoiding the media, et cetera. And, you know, one of the things you guys know as well as I do, that avoiding the media is probably the number one dumbest
mistake. Very bad thing to do.
Well, look at Mark Schauer getting skewered because he doesn't go to the
he did get skewered, too.
Yeah, and he should have. How can you not walk in and talk to reporters after you've done a quote-unquote town hall, also known as a debate?
And I even asked Debbie Sema, didn't he make an agreement? I got some grief from some people, but it was part of an agreement that was the format of that debate. He didn't show up. He should get asked the question. So.
Yeah.
You got to be asked the question.
Yeah. So avoiding the media is never a good idea. Never. And Terry's done that almost from day one.
Well, her natural proclivity to have some trouble communicating was made 10 times worse by the fear of her making a mistake.
That's what I think it was, because, when she was Secretary of State, during the State of the State messages or whatever, she was always in the Capitol. She was always ready to do the spin with the media. She never did, in my estimation, in those cases, a bad job. She knew the issues. It was like she almost got scared
But her initial handlers were all from, West Michigan. I didn't recognize a lot of the names. I mean, it's just like, who's the big people? I mean, not to say you were going to work for her, but where are the regular people who understand politics and messaging? They hit her. They're working on her hair or makeup or clothes, what to say.
How'd that work out?
Not very well.
See, and that's shameful. Let's work on substance. We can deal with the packaging later. Let's work on substance. Was she just better at state issues and couldn't get a handle on federal issues?
Probably.
Yeah. Because, meltdown. Okay. Poor thing.
All right, let's go down to the ballot. Any congressional races we should be concerned about? Are they all going to come out as expected?
Well, what I'd like to see how close the Upton race gets. I mean,
that's interesting.
There's some rumblings about that seat.
That is the one that really we're sort of forgetting about. Because remember, when I go back in history, Dukakis did very well there in 1988. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Democrats have consistently done better in Southwest Michigan every year. And, Upton, remember he was way to the far right, anti-world, whatever, that he modified himself. There was an interview between him, and then he'd gone back to conservative.
Right.
And that district has grown much more moderate over the years, especially from people around that area.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. We were talking about this morning. Even if Paul Clements doesn't win that race, he could very well be setting himself up very nicely for another run during a presidential year when the turnout could be in his favor. So it's an interesting race.
Yeah, his team's been very well organized. They're reaching out. They're doing
decent money raising,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's interesting because that's sort of the sleeper that just came up, I think, in terms of being talked about in the last few weeks where, I actually think that Pam Burns, Tim Walberg, I'm crossing my fingers for Pam Burns, crossing them hard, writing checks.
Even if Pam doesn't win, and I've said this from day one, not that Gretchen Driscoll has a real competitive opponent, but her making that competitive race that helps Teresa Bad, helps Gretchen Driscoll. I mean, there's several other. Even if she comes up short, she has helped party-wise and people on her side. She's definitely helped them.
The one that they don't seem to get it right is the Democrats in the first. It seems every time they get together, the candidate does very well in the primary, then goes silent after the primary. Cochran was very good in the primary and disappeared. But back to the Upton seat, if you look at redistricting, remember the geography that Upton got was to protect Amash. Mm-hmm. Okay, because it was become mm-hmm. Democratic mm-hmm. leaning. So mm-hmm. all those Democrats from Calhoun County was given to Upton. And so basically it skewered that whole district.
Oh, interesting.
Because remember, Upton didn't want that area. Amash didn't want the area. But they figured Upton was better handled to handle it right. and gave it to Upton versus Amash. So that's what happened out there. That's a redistricting issue that caused that.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. Jack, what do you think? Anything going to surprise us out of the congressionals?
Not that I'm aware of. And again, but all of everything we're talking about still comes down to the same thing. It comes down to the turnout.
Turnout.
You know, I suspect, I still think it's probably going to be a low turnout, and it's just going to be a matter of, you know, a lower, comparatively low Republican turnout, and what will the Dems do? Will they stay at home, or will they turn out, in higher numbers than they usually do in a gubernatorial year?
Well, the other problem the Democrats are having right now is that typically in a good year, their turnout advantage or IDing is usually 6 to 8 points when they win statewide. They've been hovering at a 5-point advantage now for the last 4 months. That's why we can't say it's going one way or the other. It's been a 5-point ID advantage statewide by everybody's poll. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Rasmussen, PPP, all of us had the same 5-point advantage for Democratic turnout. It's not 6, 7, or 8. When Democrats win statewide, usually the strong numbers are 6, 7, 8. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's been hovering at 5. And that's why it's so hard to debate this, because it's still more turnout than Republicans claiming. But at the same time, go back to your issue on turnout. If you take the last AV voter number, okay, which is 800-some thousand AV voters requesting, 4 times that is 3.2 million people. Democrats need to get to 3.3 or 3.5. So unless Republicans stay home, goes back to your case, mm-hmm. the Snyder can win.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right, let's talk about the state Senate. The Democrats here really need to knock off. They need to win the 20th, and then they probably need to win in the 17th or the 32nd. What do you guys think is going to happen?
The 20th is the
Margaret O'Brien.
That's a fascinating race.
Lawrence Lankey in there.
So that's a fascinating race because both Margaret and Sean are Michigan political leadership graduates. So it's very interesting. Now, the last time we had that was Deb Shaughnessy and Teresa Abbott. That race, neither of them acted like MPLP grads. From what I've seen of the Sean McCann, Margaret O'Brien race, both of them are really sort of keeping it a relatively high bar, and it'll be interesting what Wenke does.
Yeah. Then the 17th?
Okay, so that's a seat that... it's my understanding that's a toss-up right now. You go down to the 17th, a Spade against Zorn.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Well, now they're really fearful because all of a sudden they're really going heavy against Spade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a lot more money to play with, too.
Interesting. You have Spade, who's doing well in Lenawee County, which is more Republican than Monroe. Dale's got his little enclave of, you know, Zornville area that I like to call it, where, you know, for the last 3 generations... Zorns have served there. And then there's the Saginaw race. Depending on who you listen to, Ken Horn could be up by 5 and Stacey Orenoak could be up by 6 or vice versa.
Well, what happened to that one, as you well know, Stacey Oaks did not work very well in the black community in the primary. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then come the general, she was up like 20 points at one time and only went down to 5, 2, or 1 because she's not been the aggressive door-to-door campaigner that they were expecting her to be.
But I will say, you know, you look at the I-75 corridor. And if you're talking, if Lon Johnson's truly getting these voters out in Genesee County and Saginaw County, that's definitely going to help.
It will.
It's going to help Stacey, although Stacey is going to run into problems out county because you have Republicans, some that are heated races, house races, in out county Saginaw and Genesee County.
Right, in out county, which is interesting because out county Saginaw is a lot more right for life, much more conservative. Yep. You know, so that's a whole different. Democrats are still much more because they're white. So that'll be a whole issue how that plays out.
Is it a sure bet that the Republicans won't hang on to the
supermajority? No, it's not.
Could still hang on.
Yes.
Which would be
surprising. So I have a question: is Stacey Irwin Oaks any more liked in her own district than she is in Lansing?
No.
It varies. You know, we had Garnett Lewis in the primary, and there were areas in the city that Stacey should have really walloped her, and Garn did really well. And then there were other areas in the city that Stacey did really well. But there were undertones, there were minorities that were supporting Garnett, some of the church community, some of the church ladies in the city of Saginaw were supporting Garn. But I don't know how it is. Maybe it's the raps she has that she creates and puts on the radio. I don't know.
But in the poll we did for Mirror GSSI, the Out County Blacks were just as strong supporting Horn as they were Stacey Young. Remember that?
Yep.
I mean, so
there's this constant underground rumbling of, does she live in the district or not? You know, even her literature had a picture of her house. It wasn't even her house where they did the family photos.
Then there's supposedly some investigations going on about
her
housing development.
Yeah, and all that stuff, the federal investigation. Yeah. So,
okay. Let's talk about house races. I mean, we mentioned, I don't know, did we mention before, or did we broadcast, I think, but the 71st, clearly, the events. What other ones are should we be watching?
85th.
Oh, that's the one you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, you have a libertarian who's running, and you've got a Democrat whose husband's the sheriff, whose brother's the probate judge, whose cousin's a district judge, and whose cousin's sister-in-law in the Register of Deeds. You pull those two names together, Dignan Braidwood, very well-known name. She's out working. She's raised money. Ben sort of has suffered from what the governor has suffered for the last 4 years, not really communicating, getting the message out there of, you know, this was the agenda, this is what we voted on. So that's the seat. The Cotter seat in Mount Pleasant, you know, you hear rumblings there.
62nd Bison.
The Bison one, that's a seat where the Democrats should have wrapped up. We have Dr. John Bison as a client there who is leading. That one may be decided on a turnout in the city of Battle Creek.
But that's his opponent is Battle Creek City Commissioner, right? Andy Hamholt.
Yeah. Yep.
But the polling of Bison in the city, they love him.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. But I mean, he's a doctor. I mean,
so what about? So there's a seat. I think it's Kalamazoo. The Grant Iden and John Fisher. So I know a number of organizations that have withdrawn their support for Iden.
There's two issues. One, there was the phone call that went out to. Yeah. Which was, I believe, a caucus mistake. And then he lied about a drunk driving or some kind of alcohol incident that happened a long time ago, which I believe was 2010, 2011. That was the whole MLive thing.
So the issue on that is, because I actually sit on one of the
practices. And that's Margaret O'Brien's house seat.
So it's not, the issue isn't on the drunk driving thing, the issue isn't, You were driving drunk.
It's how he answered
it's
the survey.
The failure to disclose and to, in fact, lie. And what that does is get at the integrity of someone. And I think that's really going to hurt him, especially when there's a minister running against him on the other side, right?
And it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and the phone call thing was ridiculous. Right. To call his mother in a nursing home, right? Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. There's the Monroe House seat, the Dalesorn House seat, which is Jason Shepherd against, I'm not sure who the D candidate is. That seat's in play.
The one that I'm interested in, can Holly Hughes ever get respect?
Holly Hughes.
Can she ever get respect?
Well, you know, she's also got a third-party candidate running there. But it's my understanding the governor's running really well in Muskegon, believe it or not.
Not in the city, but...
In the area. Okay. So, boil all this down for us. What do you think the number of the balance power is going to be at the end of the day?
I mean, I don't want to take the easy answer and say that, you know, they could get above 60, but they could also get below 55. But there's going to be some gains. Obviously, you're going to have Canfield in the thumb. That's the seat they're going to get back. They could get the bed seat back. They could pick up the Bison seat. But some of those could be wiped out by losing them, you know, the Monroe seat, the Brandt Iden seat. They very well could spend millions and millions of dollars and still end up at 59.
Which... is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, they need to go above 60. I mean, the map is made to withstand three presidential races to win with a majority of about 57, 58, which means you need to get up into the 60s.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to get that cushion. I don't think you're going to lose the Cotter seat. I don't think they're going to lose the Blarden seat. Those races are probably closer than they should.
The other one you were talking about is Monroe, the Macomb County Yandex race, the 25th.
With Nick Hawatma, yep.
Yeah, that's the one that the Democrats forgot about, and they could end up losing it because...
Oh, is that Yandex?
Yeah, that's the one that...
That's the one that Sean Clark ran last two times for. And if you know Nick Hawatma and you've seen him lately, he's lost about 30 pounds. I mean, he is 35 pounds. He's working.
I don't think they'll get to 60 either. I think it's going to be a wash. I think the Dems are going to pick up one and lose one. Probably lose the Terry Brown race.
And, go Dead Stefan, yeah.
And then they're going to pick up the Zorn seat.
So, I mean, you spend millions of dollars
to arrive exactly where you started from.
But they should, to get ready for the presidential, they should be up over 60.
Okay.
So what's your prediction in the seat that you get, that we were talking about before we actually started the podcast, and that's the Teresa Abed, Tom Barrett?
I think Tom wins it. I think it's going to be close. I think everything's trending his way. The Dems have went after Tom on a lot of issues, and it hasn't affected him as much as the issues against Teresa. It's hard to
lower the turnout benefits Tom Barrett. Yeah. The lower the turnouts, the worse the turnout, Tom does better.
He's, you know, it's hard to, just like it's hard to attack a female candidate, it's hard to attack a recent war veteran, combat veteran. He's against the pension tax, and there's a lot of stuff that they're trying to attack him on. He's opposed to. And this is a seat where we've watched closely, going all the way back from Susan Tabor days in '98, and then you had Rick, and you know you've had all these races that we've watched. There's been a lot of work, a lot of ID work that's gone into Eaton County. Tom has learned from areas where Deb ignored last time, and he's not making that mistake this time.
I
think he's going to win, but not by that much.
And the poll, the last poll we did, because we did that poll twice now, the fact that he's picked up a tremendous amount of support amongst seniors.
He's going
up. His biggest jump was amongst seniors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in Delta Township, it was 50-50.
No, there is a high absentee number in Delta Township.
Delta Township.
Really high, like 8,000, I think.
Which could have a benefit impact.
Yep.
It'll be fun to watch. Well, that kind of wraps up our whole run down the ballot. I want to thank you guys for joining us, Kelly, Jack, Ed, and Dan.
Thank you.
We're going to be back next week with obviously an analysis of everything that happened on Tuesday and after.
Dan and Ed have to defend their record of not saying a single thing in terms of predictions. Perfect. I can't wait.
Well, he did come in today and saying it's a jump ball. It's a jump ball. And he didn't get off that message. He stuck the message.
That's true. Well, that takes a lot of cojones to say jump ball.
But his background, my background, we're Republican Democrat. I mean, the bottom line, it's that close up there. I
it's
mean,
that close up there.
It's that close.
How fun, though, really.
Absolutely.
I mean, how fun to have.
I mean, for us to watch, I mean, this is like, it's going to get any better than this.
This is cotton candy for the junkies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Isn't
absolutely.
It?
It is.
Absolutely.
It's wonderful.
Great description.
It is.
Cotton
absolutely.
Candy for the junkies and pizza for pizza Terry Lynn for Lance.
Pizza for Terry Lynn.
Her cadre of three right. volunteers.
With that, I'm John Roerink with MERS. We're going to sign off for this MERS Monday podcast.